I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show. My colleague of many years, Michael Vlahos, decades of Johns Hopkins. We continue our conversation, are we now in a civil war? We look very closely at the Roman model because the Romans invented civil war. We're told by the poets that the only antidote to civil war is forgetting. Forgetting. That's the only way to live on. We're not forgetting, we're remembering. Because simultaneously, Michael and I are two Roman equestrian class citizens living in Londinium in 90 AD, drinking our cup of wine by the Thames, reflecting, remembering the Republic and where it went, remembering the Civil War, the Bellum Civili of the first century BCE, remembering the murder of Caesar, all that happened before the first triumvirate, all that happened afterwards, the second triumvirate, and then the Senate begging Octavian, the slayer of Antony and Cleopatra, well, he didn't slay them, he let him commit suicide, begging him to take the crown, to be the king they always claimed they feared, Augustus. All right, we're now 90 AD. His successor is Domitian in our lifetimes, a semi-divine figure. But we're philosophizing. Where did the Republic go? We don't miss it, but what happened? Where did it go? Michael Germanicus, a very good evening to you. I read a news item from the 21st century for you to help me understand, Germanicus, Michael, where the Republic went and how the people who we regarded as the great success of the Republic were part of that process of transformation into an empire. This is the Daily Mail from London. Group of 75 Silicon Valley leaders, including Laureen Powell Jobs and Eric Schmidt, signed letter opposing recall of Gavin Newsom as 2.2 million signatures have been gathered to force a veto, a vote on a new state leader. Among the 75 Silicon Valley bigwigs backing Newsom are Laureen Powell Jobs, Eric, that's Steve Jobs' widow, Eric Schmidt, Ron Conway, Reid Hoffman, Marisa Mayer, and Sean Parker. 75 very, very, very wealthy people in the solar system against 2.2 million signatures, the Populares. Michael, how does this explain losing the Republic and welcoming the empire? Good evening to you.
Good evening, Gaius. There is an unseen distinctiveness in American elites today. In other words, they are a cohesive class, of course, but they are also a distinctive subculture. And one of the most important elements in elites is that as they are successful, they move in a direction away from the people. And as they move away from the people, they begin to lose the authority that made them successful in the first place. And I have five aspects to that. And it seems to work. I've gone through much of recorded history, and I found that there is a kind of elite cycle of five or six generations where elites lose it. And how and why do they lose it? Well, first of all, elites always seek to grow their status and wealth. That is inescapable. It's like an algorithm. I've compared it to non-playable characters in a video game. They will always go for accumulating wealth, passing it on, and generation by generation, their hold over the society and their position above the rest of the people gets greater and greater. They're more and more at a remove, and they are more and more in a position to think of themselves only, to become literally selfish. Number two, elites become disconnected from the people they once led.
We just had an example of that. 75 signatures versus 2.2 million signatures. 75 versus 2.2 million, and they regard that as a win. It's astonishing,
yes.
Michael.
Yes, and there was a time, though, at the beginning of this cycle of leadership, which I go back to the rise of FDR after the failures of Al Smith and the Democrats over time, and the emergence of FDR to the point where he became a beloved figure, emotionally tied to all Americans. And it's been about a century, five or six generations since FDR, and we can see how far that leadership class has come. And the disconnection from the people, sadly, is deeply connected to the personal leadership and the personal sacrifice and shared privation that come out of war. One of the reasons war is so central in Western society and so central to the American experience and the idea of America as a unified nation comes out of war. And what happens in war? A fraternity of arms is what happens. There is this powerful bond between elites and people. Elites are the officers, even the generals, but they are deeply engaged with the people they lead. And you can think about these leaders in past leadership cycles in America. Above all, George Washington in the Civil War, Ulysses Grant, and in World War II, Dwight Eisenhower. And the rapport and the closeness they have with the people is reflected in the fact that each of them served two terms as emperor, as president. And this has been lost. That hasn't been a connection for 40, 50, 60 years. And we saw it after 9/11 when George W. Bush, the then emperor, didn't rally Americans to a fighting cause. He said, go shopping. And today you have the military as Praetorian cohorts who are there to defend the executive, as they are doing right now as we speak, around the Capitol building in the White House, and to do whatever the president's will might be. So the third element is that elites inevitably come to believe that it is all about them. They are the nation. Because as they increase their status and wealth, as they get removed, detached from the people they once led, they inevitably think that they are the world, and in fact they come to look at the people who are hurting typically at this point, who are not doing well, who are not performing or not in a position where they can do well economically, and that creates a kind of contemptuous noblesse oblige where the elites are saying to themselves, oh, you are the children that we rule over. We will help you. We will give you gigantic stimulus bills to keep you afloat. You're dependent on us, and you must do as we say. This is a cycle of thinking, of assumption and revelation and conviction that gets more and more sure of itself, more and more confident, to the point where there is no way that elites can look at the people in anything like equality. The fourth thing, every solution to problems, and these are problems brought by change because change is always there, every solution to problems makes them worse, and sometimes it's on purpose, by design. So elites are not only resistant to change, they will try and respond to change not in a way that deflects it or diffuses it. They will respond to change by taking measures that make the conflict inherent in that change worse and worse and worse. And there is no way in which elites can adapt in ways that will bring them back to a position of successful leadership of the people who once trusted them, who once put their confidence and were loyal to these leaders. And the leadership, the elite leadership now, and I put leadership in quotes, is totally focused on submission. And so you move from embrace to submission. You saw this in the new administration. It talked a big line about healing America and bringing America back together. But as soon as it took power, Everything was about submission, creating an other in the form of domestic terrorists who happened to be potentially the entire half of the U.S. that voted against blue. So you have solutions that are the worst kind of thing imaginable. You see this on the border as well. I won't go into it, but it's quite clear that the solutions that are put into place only aggravate a situation that is unraveling. And five, of course, is, and this is the key to elites, they can never see how the path they're on leads inevitably to their fall. They cannot see who they really are. They cannot see what they're doing and how destructive it is. And they can't see because they can't afford to see. They are so invested in their superiority and their high station in the world that it is impossible for them to imagine conceding anything and stepping back or walking in the other guy's shoes, meaning the shoes of the people who are hurting. And we see this in every single elite, whether it's Roman elites, there were several cycles of Roman imperial elites and Republican elites, or the papal imperium of the High Middle Ages, or the most famous in our minds, which, of course, were the, you know, what I call the European powdered wigs of the Ancien Régime, the aristocrats who, you know, in France, they had to be toppled and they had to be beheaded en masse. Well, we're not quite there yet, but the fact is that the elites are on a course, as indicated so electrically in such neon light by that news report about the archons of Silicon Valley backing Newsom and denying the people. That is not so much a revelation, it's a confirmation that the elites today in America are definitely moving in a direction that will take us toward either insurgency or possibly revolution.
Michael Vlahos of Johns Hopkins, illustrating what we've learned over the last 2,000 years since the Romans invented civil war, what to watch for, the road signs for a republic disintegrating into an empire, disintegrating into, well, you understand what happened to the Roman Empire. 2,000 years later, we have the institutions, law, we have the architecture, we have the civil war. When we come back, why is it that Caius and Germanicus, Michael and John, are spending all this time about a Roman model? Why are we talking about the first century BCE and the first century CE? Because all of our forebears, everything all the way back to Augustine, have dealt with the same dramatis persona. It informs during periods of stress, tumult, not the growth period, the crumbling period of epoch after epoch. When we come back, I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show.